You're listening to Stateside on Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. 2 years after Toledo's water supply was shut down by so-called blue-green algae, people are still worried about the safety of the drinking water. Toxins called microcystins are sometimes produced by certain freshwater cyanobacteria associated with the algae. Algal blooms are more likely under certain conditions, and every summer Toledo is on the watch for an increase. Tom Henry is a columnist with the Toledo Blade and has extensively covered this problem in Lake Erie. First, Tom, how did Toledo's water supply fare this summer?
Actually, not too bad. There wasn't never really a threat this year, but you got to keep in mind we got a one-year reprieve from a drought. The fact that we even had a bloom out there was pretty remarkable, and is from a scientific standpoint, it shows the resiliency and the durability. The potential carryover. Last year we had a record bloom, and the conventional wisdom that everything dies off and you kind of start with this clean slate the next year showed that's not necessarily true.
So some of this is carrying over through the winter, it sounds like.
Yeah, it carries over through the winter, the seeds and so forth, and that's exactly what the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA and Ohio Sea Grant and others thought might happen, that we're still going to see a bloom. So the bloom here was toxic in some areas, but still considered fairly mild in terms of volume and biomass. Most of it was along the shoreline, kind of hugging the Maumee Bay shoreline and out in the open water more than around the water take intakes.
So tell me, what kind of precautions has the city of Toledo taken in the last couple of years to protect its water supply?
It's been doing pretty good job of trying to modernize its water treatment plant. Under orders from the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency, it's been putting about $300 million into upgrading and modernizing the plant. They've put in more pre-treatment capability to treat the toxin along the way. The cornerstone of the improvements is going to be the ozone technology, ozonation, which hasn't come online yet. They're still installing that, but that'll further help. Really, the focus has been and should continue to be on addressing the problem at the source with,
right.
With the runoff. Yeah,
that's something I wanted to ask you
sure.
about. That runoff, you know, mostly agricultural nutrients from farm fields. So what has Ohio done to try to reduce the agricultural runoff?
There's been a huge influx of state and federal grant money, incentives for farmers. The fertilizer applicators have been going through training, trying to, they call the four R's, the right place, right time, right amount, and right location, and trying to do more with GPS and other tools they have with more precision, putting in the nutrients there, just applying where they're needed the most. One of the biggest focuses also has been on the concentrated animal feeding operations, the CAFOs, trying to make sure that their manure management is adequate.
From what I've been reading in the Toledo Blade, your paper, there seems to be a lack of confidence in the water supply by the residents. Are people drinking the water or using it for things like cooking or bathing, or are they taking a pass and using more bottled water?
They're getting pretty much back to normal now. The next scare will probably, you know, have people running to the supermarkets for bottled water again. I can't say there's still a lot of anxiety there. The late mayor, Michael Collins, he and I talked a lot about this during the water crisis, and he told me afterwards that, you know, it was a crisis of confidence, that he said people lost faith, lost confidence in us, as they should have, because we let them down. The Toledo Lucas County Health Department did a study, residents and their behaviors 5 weeks after the water crisis, and there was still a huge percentage, I want to say something like 70% of the people still weren't using tap water, you know, like they were before the crisis. The interesting thing last year, in 2015, at every sign of algae, I mean, that was on the TV news or in the Toledo Blade, even when the toxins weren't a threat to the water treatment plant, people ran out and were clearing bottled water off supermarket shelves last summer. little bit of a knee-jerk reaction because they saw what happened during the crisis in 2014 and wanted to stock up. As you may know, with the crisis in 2014, you know, before the National Guard came in and everything else, the crisis was announced on Facebook by the city of Toledo at 2 in the morning. By 3 in the morning, a lot of people had gone out, and all water within 100 miles was sold out.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I can't help but think about the crisis of confidence in water service in Toledo and what's happening in Flint. I mean, you've covered some of the Flint water lead contamination issue. Both cities, for different reasons, both human-caused, cannot with complete confidence depend on clean water in their cities, particularly Flint, which you can only drink from the tap if you're using a filter. If Toledo is still skeptical a couple of years later after a one-off event, I wonder how you think the people of Flint with this ongoing issue might react in the coming years.
A good comparison. There was a study done at Marquette University out in Milwaukee, the cryptosporidium crisis in 1993, and they looked at how that affected people and their confidence in water there. And
sure, people died in that one.
Sure, and they did die, and there was quite a long-standing hit to their reputation. And one thing, you know, on the one-year anniversary here, I did a story on the marketing and branding. What does this do to a community, not just the confidence of, you know, people at the tap, but to the business community, to others? We've heard a lot about you know, different businesses that they're trying to attract CEOs, and they're having more difficulty because of Toledo's infamous reputation they got with water and so forth. So it does a lot to, especially in the case of Toledo, if it's a chronic problem, which it, you know, it has been a chronic problem since 1995. It's just that it didn't really manifest itself really dramatically until the 2014 water crisis. And there's been a large state of denial among a lot of people, even the Ohio Department of Health, for example, even though this algal toxin, and it's a very serious one, it's one of the most serious ones out in nature, was identified in 1995 and has been, you know, recurring almost annually. It wasn't until 2010 they put advisories for it, for swimming advisories at beaches. I mean, you can look at Flint, you can look at Toledo. Before Flint, Toledo was the poster boy for water quality. If you look at some of the speeches that U.S. EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy was making around the country, she would, you know, talk about Toledo, talk about West Virginia, talk about, you know, Milwaukee from years ago. But the parallels between Toledo and Flint are there in terms of missed warning signs. Flint obviously they took a lot of shortcuts. They failed to have the basic corrosion control that the American Water Works Association and others say, you know, you don't cut corners, you don't skimp on the science there. You know, they had switched over to a new water supply and hadn't done the engineering they needed to do. They had kind of a perfect storm of things come together that were just makes water experts shake their head. How did this ever happen? All these things come together at once to create the mess in Flint. But here in Toledo, you know, again, going back to the stated denial of a known problem since 1995, even when, and in Toledo's case, In the fall of 1993, there was a small township east of here, Carroll Township in Ottawa County, that became the first in the state of Ohio to become so overwhelmed by algal toxins that it had to shut down. And they had a backup there, the city of Port Clinton. But you know, I went and I spent, you know, 8 or 9 hours out at the Toledo Water Plant asking people and going through their processes in response to that in the fall of 2013. And their response was that, you know, we were too big to fail, too technologically, you know, advanced. We've got, you know, more contact time with the pretreatment chemicals and so forth. And they didn't really seem to sense that it was a possibility that we could have the crisis that we did in 2014. It's kind of funny because a friend of mine, Peter Dykstra, who used to be CNN's environmental producer, he told me he's jokingly nominated me and Mark Schlefstein from the New Orleans Times-Picayune, who had
predicted the big flood in New Orleans.
Right.
Yeah.
He in eerie detail predicted what could happen in New Orleans if it had a Katrina-like event 2 years before Katrina actually hit, and you know, with an award-winning series down there in 2003 that foreshadowed everything that ended up happening in real life. And Peter said he wanted to nominate the two of us for the quote-unquote I Told You So Pulitzer.
Yeah, you know, reporters, Tom, we're all a bunch of alarmists.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's Tom Henry. He writes on the environment and energy for the Toledo Blade. Tom, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Okay, thanks, Lester.
Let's turn now to someone who lived through the Toledo water shutdown 2 years ago. Anita Rios is an activist and former Ohio Green Party gubernatorial candidate. Take us back to August 2nd, 2014. You, like everyone else in Toledo, woke up to warnings from the government telling you not to drink the water. What was that like?
Well, being a creature of habit, like most people, I turn on the news every Saturday morning and watch it for a little bit before I get my day going. But that morning I turned it on and there was a little red alert sign at the bottom that was saying don't drink the water. And the dominant story was that our water was so contaminated that we couldn't drink it. We couldn't even touch it. So just consider what your day would be like if that happened. We couldn't make coffee. We couldn't even wash our face or brush our teeth. My husband had to get out the door without any of those things. And, of course, I quickly started thinking that we have to get water. But I also was concerned about my neighbors. I live in the inner city, and I know that some of my neighbors don't have cars or don't have the ability to get out of the city to get the things that they need.
Right, because the grocery store shelves had already been cleared out by the time you got up, I imagine.
Well, you know, I didn't even try going to the grocery store because I was watching them on the news, and on the news it was showing that the shelves were already bare in some places.
Yeah, we were just talking to Tom Henry of the Toledo Blade, and he was telling us about that. Now, the government installed some monitoring equipment in Lake Erie. Anyone can go online to check the water quality level consistently. What more could be done to safeguard Toledo's drinking water?
Well, you know, monitoring it doesn't really put in place the front-end policies and structures that would keep it from getting to the point that it got to that morning. So I think monitoring it more closely is certainly a good thing. You want to know the quality of the water, but what are they doing to improve the quality of the water is my question, and I feel that they're doing more of the same, more of what they were doing in the years that led us up to that water crisis, which is they are studying and they are considering.
Well, studying's good if you've got a problem like this that not a lot of people have dealt with. I'm just wondering if there's the money or the political will to find a better, more permanent solution. What do you know about that?
Well, I think studying is good if you need to know something. But they knew. And they know now there are just too many nutrients in the water that cause the algae to... I'm not a scientist, and honestly, I couldn't tell you all the details of what goes wrong. But what I am is a member of the community that keeps an eye on what our leaders are doing. And I feel that, no, there is not a political will. And I think that they have the information. They know why the water is contaminated. They simply do not want to put the money behind what it will take to clean it up.
Well, in all fairness, state agencies in Ohio have been working on trying to reduce the amount of nutrients that run off from agricultural fields. The question is, what is enough? And that's a question I don't think anybody has answered yet, since there's still this recurring problem. In fact, Tom Henry was telling us just the slight rise in concern about toxic algal blooms leads to people emptying out the grocery stores again, buying all that bottled water up. If there's that level of concern 2 years after the shutdown, what's it say to government officials? I mean, what are the people saying to government officials about finding the solution that you're talking about?
Well, I think that we, the people, are not saying enough because clearly they're not hearing us. I don't think they are doing enough, and I think that they are relying entirely on voluntary regulations, voluntary protections for the water, and I haven't seen any new regulations put in place.
What is the water at the tap like today in Toledo?
Well, you can drink it, but you can taste the chlorine in it. And at certain times of the year, it has a very, very strong chemically taste. Some people put filters even on their showers so that it filters out some of the contamination because you can smell it so strongly, and you can smell like you've been bleached, but it's an unpleasant thing, but it's certainly better than being poisoned.
As you well know, Flint is dealing with its own water crisis. It's different, but the resulting lack of trust and the safety of the water, mistrust of government, it's similar. What kinds of lessons can be learned with these two cities and their struggles to make sure the water is safe to drink?
Well, as a resident of the inner city of Toledo, and I've gone to Flint numerous times, there are huge similarities between Toledo and Flint. Of course, we're both Rust Belt towns that I feel are largely forgotten, and I think that for us, the ordinary citizens, the important thing is that we need to push for some of these changes because it's not going to get better without our voice loudly saying we need a solution, we need to make sure that our water is safe for ourselves, for our families, for our children, or I fear that it won't change.
Anita Rios is an activist and a former Ohio Green Party gubernatorial candidate. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're welcome. My pleasure.